As I said before, an ex-Prime Minister has joined the crusade along with an ex-Foreign Minister, but I haven't heard a squeak out of either the government or indeed the Labor Party. The Morrison government continues to say they will not interfere in the legal proceedings against Assange, and as Scott Morrison says, he should face the music, but there are others working to try and get Julian released, and one of the most long-standing supporters is Greg Barnes. Greg is a barrister who came to fame as a crusader on the Republican issue, and he's an advisor to the Australian Assange campaign. Joins us on the line from Hobart. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you, Philip.
You would have heard what Christian had to say. What sort of response do you think he will receive in Canberra?
Well, I think the points Christian is making are important points, and increasingly what we're finding when we go to Canberra, and I think Christian will find this, is that there's an increasingly positive reception on this issue, Philip, and I think for a couple of reasons. Firstly, there are people who are stunned at the idea that for simply releasing details of serious war crimes committed by the United States in theatres of war, that someone would go to jail for an effective death penalty of 175 years. And secondly, and it's a point that Christian made, which is that the health of Julian Assange and the palpable decline in health is something which concerns a lot of Australians, and I know is concerning some MPs that I meet with who might otherwise not have been sympathetic.
Tell us about the Parliamentary Friendship Group. It's a very eclectic and, dare I say, eccentric collection.
Well, look, it is. And I think it says much about this particular issue, and that is that, Philip, it's not party political. I mean, Andrew Wilkie is a good friend of mine. He's my local member here in Hobart, and he's, of course, has a strong track record in standing up to government. He himself did, as you know. But you've also got National Party MPs like Barnaby Joyce and George Christensen. You've got Labor Party MPs, the Greens, and independents like Rebecca Sharkey. I expect to see some Liberals join that group in the new year. I've had some discussions with some Liberals, and there is, as I've said a moment ago, increasing sympathy for the position that Assange finds himself in. And I think that the more you see ex-leaders such as Kevin Rudd, Bob Carr, and again, my old friend Malcolm Turnbull, when I've dealt with him on this issue, has expressed some sympathy, although I haven't spoken to Malcolm about it for some time, but I wouldn't be surprised to see some intervention by people like, I'm not necessarily saying Malcolm will, but certainly some Liberals as opposed to Conservatives talking about freedom of speech and freedom of the press. I think you will find that group expands in the new year.
I could hear a gasp of astonishment from the listener, from the Gladys and the Potties, when we mentioned the name of Christensen. What's his thought process?
Look, I think George Christensen's view on this is that, and a bit like Barnaby Joyce's, is that this is an Australian citizen who's in trouble, who is in trouble really because he's upset a superpower, in this case the United States, but is being treated appallingly. I'd forgotten this, but those who are around me in the campaign, in the Australian Assange campaign, well remember the fact that Barnaby Joyce crossed the floor in relation to David Hicks and was very supportive of David Hicks, who, of course, was brought back from Guantanamo Bay by the then Howard government.
So there are similarities to the Hicks case.
Well, I think there are, Philip, in this sense that, you know, the Morrison says and others say, we won't interfere in the legal processes, but you remember this well, Philip, that in the Hicks case, of course, it was said that Hicks would have to face the music, as it were. There would be a military trial. But, of course, the more we knew about the Hicks case and the mistreatment of Hicks by the United States, the more it started to become part of the national psyche.
It could be described as a slow burn, couldn't it?
Yeah, and let me tell you, this issue is a slow burn. I mean, I've been around it since 2000, and 10 or 11, and this issue is a slow burn. But what we have seen in increasingly in recent weeks, and even, you know, where I go and get my coffee in the morning in Hobart and talking to other people, people having seen Julian on the TV, you know, when he has his court appearances, saying, wow, he looks really unwell. Australia should be doing something about this. And I think there is a view out there in the community, like there was with Hicks, that says, you know, really the Australian government has to step up in these sorts of cases, has to prevail on its closest ally and do something to ensure some justice in this particular case.
Talking to Greg Evans, now let's look at the collective.
Greg Barnes.
Let's look at the collective at as it stands. We've got Wilkie, we've got Joyce Christensen, Independent Zali Steggall, Centre Alliance's Rebecca Shankey, Rex Patrick. From Labor, Julian Hill and Steve Georgianis. And I understand that that London-based lawyer, Julian's lawyer, Jennifer Robinson, will be helping you brief people next week.
Well, she in fact was there last week, Philip. She briefed along with myself and Alicia Brooks. We briefed the committee, and what I enjoyed about that briefing was the fact that you do have people from across the political spectrum. You know, you got George Christensen engaging very positively with Peter Wish Wilson and Nick McKim and Adam Bandt on this issue, and that it did show people working together from across the political spectrum. But, you know, there are two major issues which I think alarm people, and did alarm that group, and that is 175 years that Julian faces if he were convicted of these offences. Now, let me tell you, as a lawyer, Philip, even if you accepted everything in the prosecution's favour, if this were in Australia, he would get maybe 10 to 15 years, probably not, though, but maybe 10 to 15 years on top. In other words, as a sort of a period he'd have to serve. You know, you look at that and then you look at 175 years and you just see this gross disproportion. But the second point I think people are concerned about is that, and it's the point that Kristen made earlier, there's a precedent here. This is the first time you've seen the United States effectively say, we'll go after anyone, anywhere in the world, if we think that they've embarrassed us. And that is a frightening prospect, and it's a frightening prospect I would have thought for every Australian journalist.
Yeah, I just wish more liberals had joined.
Look, as I said, Philip, I think that you will see some liberals join in the new year. It is a slow burn issue. There are certainly liberals that I've spoken to who are sympathetic. And look, you know, my own sense, I know I've known Maurice Payne for 25 years. I haven't seen a lot of her in recent times, but she, I think, is a person who's open to persuasion on this particular issue. Certainly in our previous dealings with Julie Bishop when she was Foreign Minister, she played it very straight. We can't complain about that. And certainly in our dealings in the last 12 months or so, she played it straight. In fact, she's the one who gave Julian Assange back his passport. So I think there is some common sense that might prevail in this issue, and increasingly so when people realise that this is just a gross overreach by the United States. And on occasion, and it is rare, but on occasion, Australia has to stand up to Washington. It did so in Hicks, and it can do so again.
These arguments have had an effect on two people that I've been talking to for quite a while, the aforementioned Carr and Rudd, and that is the absolute insanity of, you know, of sending someone to the slammer for 175 years. Mm. It isn't just cruel, it's nuts.
Mm. Oh, look, you're right. I mean, it's what they call in the anti-death penalty movement an effective death penalty, and that's what it is. And, of course, in Australia, we have taken a view over many, many years that we won't extradite people, Australians, and we don't want to see Australians get on death row in the United States. Well, this is death row. You go to jail with no hope of parole. Your life is finished. And it is nuts. And for what? For what? For the exposure of serious war crimes committed by the United States in theatres of war.
Greg, I'm afraid that one of the problems at the moment is the lobbying is made more difficult by this frantic obsession in Canberra with national security.
No doubt about that. I mean, Paul Keating, probably put it more eloquently than any of us when he talked about the Nutters. Having said that, I think the main opposition to what we do when we go to Canberra is coming from the United States Embassy. I mean, I think there's no doubt that we've been quite effective, and the group that I work with have been very effective in the last 6 to 12 months in garnering support. And I think there has been some pushback from the US Embassy and from the United States government. But you're right in the sense that whilst we've got Julian Assange in the position he's in, we've also got that disgraceful case involving Bernard Collaery, who, again, I know well, who's, you know, Canberra lawyer. Who, what did they do? They exposed Australian illegality in East Timor. You know, so there's a pattern here, which is that when you out the truth about the conduct of governments, you get punished. Now, I think out on the street, when I talk to people about Assange, and when I talk to the average Joe about Assange, and you explain the case, most people are pretty horrified, Philip. And you'd remember this, Philip, in relation to Hicks. You know, Hicks started off, most people said, well, who cares what happens to Hicks? He found himself in, I think, in Afghanistan, training with Al-Qaeda. There was a photograph of him with some sort of military weapon. There wasn't a lot of sympathy at all. He was seen to be a terrorist. But, of course, that was turned around as people understood, again, the gross overreach and the crushing nature of the US supposed justice system, and people won't stand for that.
Have you tried to talk Peter Greister around? One of my great personal disappointments has been Peter's attitude.
Look, I had a conversation with Peter about this, and certainly, and I think Jennifer Robinson did in London as well, and certainly he did say in London, after he'd written his article in which he said he wasn't a journalist, he did say that Assange was in the same ecosystem, I think was the phrase that he used. I think it has been disappointing, the attitude of some who say he's not a journalist. My point to them would be it doesn't really matter. What matters is that you've got someone who's exposed the wrongdoing of the United States, journalist or publisher. It doesn't really matter what you call them, but the precedent has been established, and it's dangerous for you, and it's dangerous for anyone, and it's dangerous for democracy. That you have this sort of gross overreach by the United States, and really arguing now, is he a journalist or is he not a journalist, is beside the point.
I've got to ask you this, just as I asked, about Christian, about how Julian, you know, maintains his sanity. How is Julian's family holding up?
Look, I have a lot to do with his father, and I have a lot to do with his mother. I think they're both remarkable people. His father is currently in Europe and has spent a lot of time in the UK this year, quite obviously. His mother has been very active on social media, but this is traumatic for parents because you're seeing your child go through something you never want to see your child go through, and in this case, of course, in the public arena. And it's so obvious and so evident. And the footage of him emerging from the embassy earlier in the year, the footage we've seen and the description of the court appearances and the difficulties that he's had is gut-wrenching for any parent. And he's got two fantastic parents who, as I say, I work with closely. And both of them, I think, are holding up remarkably well considering, you know, what's happening in relation to this particular case.
Greg, what happens if the Brits astonish us and refuse the extradition request? What would happen next to Julian?
Well, one of the interesting issues, Philip, is that because he overstayed his visa, if this was just a normal case of an Australian who overstayed their visa, there'd be a deportation notice and he'd be told, you're on the next plane back to Australia, and he'd be taken to the airport and put on the plane and sent back to Australia. Now, if the British say, no, we're not going to extradite, as I understand it, there is a deportation notice and he may well come back to Australia. And, of course, in other words, this matter would fall into the lap of the Morrison government, although potentially, given the longevity of appeal processes in the UK, this might be right in the context of another election in 2022 if it goes that long. And so this could fall in Australia's lap, and the United States might turn to Australia and say, all right, we didn't get him there, but now we're going to file an extradition request in Australia. What are you going to do?
The US would appeal the decision, wouldn't they?
Oh, look, if they lose the extradition hearing in February of next year, I've got no doubt there'll be an appeal, and vice versa, for that matter. Working through the UK court process is similar to here, Philip, in the sense that it would probably certainly go into 2022. And as I say, if there's a final decision to be made in 2022, it may well be that Australia is faced with the prospect of Assange coming back here and the United States putting pressure on Canberra to say, we want this guy. Now, that's where, you know, a smart government, I think, would be saying, let's think about these scenarios. Do we really want to be in this position? Do we really want to be in a position where we've got a lot of domestic opposition to Assange being extradited to the United States? Do we really want to have that pressure put on us by the United States? Or should we get involved early on and start to try and find a resolution, as they were forced to do in relation to Hicks?
Should the Australian government be appealing to the British, the Americans, or both?
Oh, look, I think both, Philip. I mean, this is a case where all three have got skin in the game, if I can put it that way. And, you know, Australia has got good relations with both, and there's no reason why the Australian government can't pick up the phone and talk to their counterparts in London and in Washington to seek a resolution of this matter. Assange is an Australian citizen. His family's in Australia. Australia is a country that has an involvement in this case, and we ought to be using that goodwill that, you know, we are loyal allies, as our governments keep telling us, of Washington and London, and we ought to be using those good graces in order to facilitate an outcome, which means we preserve Julian Assange's life, we ensure that he doesn't get an effective death penalty, and thirdly, that, of course, we make a point about standing up on issues such as freedom of the media.
As I know from emails and response to tweets, there are still a great many Australians who don't like Julian at all. But what is our message to them?
I think the message is simple. You've got to differentiate the person and what you think of that person from the issue. I mean, I've encountered a lot of my friends, for example, Philip, and lawyers particularly over the years, who've said, I don't like what happened in the 2016 election. I think, you know, the leak of the DNC emails cost Hillary the election. I mean, I disagree with them. We can have that argument. But my point to them is that's not the issue here. The issue is you have a person who published material about war crimes committed by the United States. Those publications were, of course, republished in a number of more traditional media outlets. He's now facing an effective death penalty. He's also facing extraordinarily oppressive prison conditions. That's something we should tolerate.
Greg, I agree with you, of course, and I thank you very much for coming on, but we're out of time. Greg Barnes, barrister and advisor to the Australian Assange campaign.